The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. We will have a business of sports deep dive today with Bob Thompson, retired president of Fox Sports Networks and Fox Sports International. Bob's a Valley resident. Wilner actually put me on the radar with Bob, and really want to get deep into the Pac-12 network negotiation, into all the things that are going on around the ASU U of A and the TV rights within the conference, also the LIV and the PGA Tour. So we'll do all that with Bob Thompson. That comes up here at 10:20. Last night, all hell broke loose with Hamilton being suspended from the postseason this year. Hamilton is, if you're not aware of Hamilton High School and the magnitude of this story, think Alabama being told you can't be in the postseason in the SEC here in Arizona. Hamilton is a very good academic school, first and foremost. This isn't me, you know, sugarcoating it. I have a son who goes to a different school in the Chandler School District. I've been out here 16 years. I know the school area. Yes, it's the wild, wild west when I talk about recruiting and going after players, so on and so forth. Hamilton was dead flat guilty. Assistant coach, dead flat guilty. AIA, to me, caught a big fish, made an example out of the big fish. There's a week to appeal, and I'm hoping that cooler heads prevail. And all those kids on campus at Hamilton that had nothing to do with this and had to find out yesterday while they're in class, like their phones start going off, from my understanding, and they found out their season, they're not going to be allowed to play in the playoffs. Because if something happened in June, it makes no sense to me in any way, shape, or form. Unless the way it works out here, a lot of people that are at Chandler High School are celebrating today. People at Saguaro High School are celebrating today. That's how it usually goes. You know, it's just how it is. Basha High School, people are celebrating today. There's certain high schools where if something happens at Hamilton, oh my gosh, end of the world. And they're wrong, and they were caught, and it was an assistant coach, and it was cheating. But it's no way, shape, or form, in my opinion, that you take down a group of 120 kids for something done by a rogue assistant coach on a DM that was screenshotted by a very good, smart player over at Cesar Chavez. So we're going to get into that. Opening comments brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That's Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate Jeff Mishi and their ongoing support. Yeah, the Hamilton story is right there at the top of the list. But I think there's a few other things today. Today, Tiger Woods is on my radar because the PGA Tour is calling an all-hands-on-deck meeting today. And Jay Monahan, the president of the PGA Tour, all-hands-on-deck today. I'm going to talk with Bob Thompson about what are the TV executives thinking of this whole LIV and the PGA Tour. Because it is a battle of millionaires against millionaires or eventually billionaires that is going on. We just like golf. We do. But for Tiger Woods to fly in today, that is the lead story in sports across the country today. It's not about preseason football in the middle of August. You know, don't insult me or waste my time on that stuff. This is big. And you know, the idea of the TV networks that are sitting here watching the sport be uneven as it is right now, are they concerned about where it's heading? One day Tiger's not going to be there. And are Justin Thomas and Rory McIlroy and Jordan Spieth strong enough to carry the tour along, bringing along fresh young faces? It's all about getting the money on the LIV side. We got it. We understand it. But is it sustainable as a business model? So we will talk with Bob Thompson on the business side of sports about that. Diamondbacks got whacked last night in San Francisco, 6-1. Madison Bumgarner, you know, the sun sets about 7:20. Sun rises about 5. I'm an early riser. Madison Bumgarner, as the sun rises and the sun sets, we'll give you about, I don't know, last night's line. 5 2/3, 8 hits, 6 earned runs. That's where we are. It's really unfortunate because he was such a dominant player, such a dominant force on the mound when he was with the Giants. And when he came here initially for the Diamondbacks, we'd see him stretch out the 7 innings and have some success. But man, this is a hard watch. Like, I'd rather watch Zach Gallen than Madison Bumgarner take the hill. Because I know with Zach Gallen, unless it's just one of those rare off nights, It's seven innings, and he's blowing through teams. Merrill Kelly's going tonight. I happen to like how Merrill Kelly's come along. He's not a top-of-the-line starting pitcher. But Madison Bumgarner is just in that space now where he's not a number one. He's not a number two. He's not a number three. He is about a fourth or fifth starter in this team. You know the bullpen is going to be used heavy the night that Mad Bum pitches now. That's where he is in his career. And so the Diamondbacks did this whole deal to get him to come to Arizona. It hasn't worked out. I don't know about in the clubhouse. I'm not there. I don't know about giving influence to other pitchers on the rotation or in the bullpen or being a good teammate. I don't know about any of that stuff, okay? I'm just looking at what do the numbers show every fifth day when he's on the mound. And every fifth day, it's pretty average or below average. And that's one of those I look at with the Diamondbacks and say, how do you get out from under this contract? Because it's not going to get any better next year. Like Zach Gallen has established himself as a one. Merrill Kelly, probably a three. There can't be anything physically wrong with Mad Bum because he hasn't been on the DL this season for an extended period of time. But the other part about it is the Giants have won 18 of 20 over the Diamondbacks in the Bay Area since 2020. I mean, they just smacked them around. BP time. So same two teams get together tonight. Kevin Durant. So Kevin Durant and the Suns, it is still sitting there. We understand that. Yesterday I talked about how there was no movement over the weekend. Brian Windhorst at ESPN, their insider, reported that it's a stalemate. And I just keep saying, hang in there. If you're the Suns, keep hanging in there. It's mid-August. These things can percolate in a hurry by the time you get to late September. Training camps are about to open. Steve Nash is saying, I don't want this headache. Sean Marks is saying, I don't want this headache. They haven't won anything. They've won one playoff series since Kevin Durant has been there. They're paying him a boatload of money. He tried to get them both fired. Just keep hanging in there. Be consistent. Keep pounding the rock. Be that organization that's like, you know, if the asking price keeps dropping, I'd give up Cam Johnson. I don't think I'd give up Mikal Bridges. And I know that's the sticking point right now. I'm not somebody who wants to give up Mikal Bridges. I think Mikal Bridges is a generational talent like Sean Marion was back in the day here. You can't find those guys that are that good on the defensive end. Great teammate, gives you enough offense. Yeah, but Durant will come here and they play the same. No, they don't. You can move Kevin Durant around. You can move Mikal Bridges around. Don't just get caught up in he's a five, he's a four, he's a three, he's a two, he's a one. Don't do that. And the idea of putting Kevin Durant alongside of Devin Booker and an aging Chris Paul is attractive to a point. To a point. I'm also on that side of the street of I'm fine walking away from it. I'm not going to sit here and say, wow, what a terrible offseason. They didn't get Kevin Durant. It's not what I'm saying. Because Durant has shown it's about Kevin Durant. What I am saying is if you have a chance to get him and it's at a price that you deem to be affordable and there's a strong enough culture, strong enough locker room here, but this is a guy that said, no, I don't want to play with Steph Curry, but I do want to play with Kyrie Irving. How's that worked out for you? No, I don't like this coach, even though this coach came here, but now I want he out and I want the GM out. How's that working out for you? If there's not a strong enough backbone in this organization to say, look, you're going to come here, you're going to play your ass off, we're going to try and win a title, and that's that. I can give you both sides of the street. I can on this one. I can make it compelling to say, you know, I wouldn't take him if the asking price is way up here. But as it continues to get towards, we're in the middle of the offseason, start to get towards the end of the offseason and he's still sitting there, you might be able to get him at a bargain price. Why would you not do that? That's what I'm saying on this one. I wouldn't be disappointed if he didn't show up, however. I'll go down the street on that. Back on the Hamilton thing, so they've been banned from the postseason. They're ineligible for the playoffs. This is a program that every year you can ride in high school. There'll be 10, 15 players that go to the Division I level. Academically, it's one of the top high schools in the state. This has nothing to do, in my opinion, about previous things that have happened at Hamilton. When I hear yesterday that news trucks ran out to Hamilton, set up their live shots, and they were calling me to come on, and I didn't come on. I had things going on. And they go right back to the hazing scandal. That's just lazy, okay? That's just lazy. Well, you have to give the story context. No, this is completely different. This is completely different. It's not the same school that was in trouble in 2017, in trouble again. I know that's a great hook. I know you're trying to get eyeballs. You're trying to get people to click on your story. I understand. So you're going to just take something and run with it. No, this is Hamilton High School, a team that is in the Open Division Finals every year, caught cheating in a recruiting scandal. We'll have the story next. That's what happened. That's what is there. Screenshots don't lie. I don't want to hear it from Hamilton parents because some of them reach out. Oh, everybody's got an in for us. No, they don't. No, they don't. I'm not everyone. You know, there's others that just look at this as an open book and say, yeah, that was really stupid what you had, what an assistant coach did over there in this day and age. He took direct messages, sent direct messages to a kid at another school. And so the kid at the other school is like, yeah, I'm going to screenshot these. So I'm wondering today just how many players over at Hamilton save screenshots on their phone from other high schools that could be in the Southeast Valley or could be up in North Scottsdale, could even be over on the west side of town. And those of us who are in the high school space know pretty much the schools I'm talking about. How many of those kids are sitting there sitting on some ticking time bombs themselves and saying, I think I'm going to release these and show what was going on out there? You know, for cooler heads to prevail and have the appeal heard, fire the coach. Coach got to go. Coach got to go. You'll hear later on my animated conversation. Eric and I got mad at each other, I think, last night. He said I was crazy. My take was crazy. Like, come on, man. And Zach Alvira, too, of the Tribune. He will be, all three of us will chop it up a little bit later on the show. But up next, Bob Thompson, president of Fox Sports Network, business side of sports, a deep dive, someone whose opinion I've been following on Twitter. I really respect what he's all about. That's next. All right, business side of sports. I love the business side of sports, especially when it's someone that's right here in the Valley. I didn't even know. So John Wilner tells me about a month back, he said, you know Bob Thompson, the retired president over at Fox Sports? He's in the Valley. And I start seeing Bob's name show up in John's columns. And it's like, well, I'm an idiot. I've been here 30 plus years and did not know this. So I wanted Bob to come on to give some depth, deep dive, and not just the usual what didn't go right with the Pac-12 network, because I think that horse has been beaten to death numerous times. Actually, and I appreciate you coming on for a few minutes and joining us, Bob.
My pleasure.
So for fans that may not know, what are you doing now? You have titles, but what are you doing these days now that you're not in that role of the past president of Fox Sports?
Well, I stepped down as president in 2009, but stayed on as an advisor to Fox for another 5 years. I also started a small kind of boutique consulting firm in the sports space. With the very original name of Thompson Sports Group. So I do that, but mostly I play a lot of golf down here in the Valley when I'm not recovering from rotator cuff surgery, which I'm doing right now. So all of this kind of activity around realignment came at a really good time for me because I've been stuck sitting on a lounge chair, being able to absolutely do nothing.
Yeah, like this. I've been that with my wife.
Exactly.
I know your pain, so to speak. All right, so I want to start on Peacock, Amazon Prime, and Apple TV, because I believe that is the untapped market that is going to come to fruition here in some way, shape, or form. The focus is on the ESPNs, it's on the CBS, the majors. But take us down the road for the fan that may be saying, you know, this streaming thing, I thought that's what the Pac-12 network was supposed to be, and that didn't really work out. Where are you at on streaming all this? Because I think that is a big part of this. It's not being talked about much.
Right. I think the streaming guys are kind of betwixt and between right now. You know, they would like to have a package, but the conferences aren't quite comfortable with the product being available to such a small group of people. Mm-hmm. So I think what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to learn to walk before they run. They're going to have to bite off a piece of some of these deals that are out there with, you know, maybe a package of product that, you know, was on the Pac-12 networks or somewhere between the Pac-12 networks and the tier three rights. If the conferences can carve out something along those lines so that the streamers can get their foot in the door, I think ultimately you could see them step up and grab additional product. But again, the schools are concerned about the product not being available to as wide a group of alumni, fans, right, potential students, et cetera, as possible. So they're a little reticent to just jump whole hog into that space with the streamers.
Okay, so if you go down that space with streaming in some way, shape, or form, do you even care how many clicks are on a game to begin with? If you pull the curtain back, it's like, we only had 800 people that watched, let's just say, Washington State, Oregon State. What are we doing here? Or as you say, walk before we run. On the negotiation side, just running a network, do you care about metric on day one?
I would. I don't know that the streamers do. You know, and if I'm a conference, as it relates to viewership on the streaming channels, as long as the check doesn't bounce, I don't care how many people click on. So
right.
I think that, you know, it's important. And I read something this morning that viewership on the streamers is finally going to start to be compiled, in that Amazon is going to allow Nielsen to rate their Thursday night football games. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, there's really been no, you know, viewership data as it relates to sports on the streaming services. So, you know, hopefully this is a sign of things to come, so that the streaming services are ultimately measured on the same metrics that broadcasting cable networks are.
Okay. From there, then, what does this look like 5 years from now, from your view? The consumer comes home from work. It's a Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, because they do think, I'm seeing college in the Pac-12 starting to take over Friday, even though that's been a high school space for a long time. What's it look like for the consumer to come home and just want to watch a game? How many clicks are they going to have to get through? Or will this be easy 5 years from now, Bob? Will they be able to find the game? All the complaints that I hear from fans now.
5 years from now, you know, given that we pretty much know where the Big Ten is going to be, we know where the SEC is going to be, and the ACC, Pac-12, and Big 12 are really kind of the only unknowns, I think you're still going to have a very significant number of the games on broadcast television. Mm-hmm. Then you'll have a cable package. They have a conference channel. There'll be some product on there, just as it's been the last, you know, 10 or so years. There's also going to be a streaming package, whether it's an ESPN Plus, whether it's a Amazon Prime, Apple TV, Peacock, whatever. So I think it's going to not look a whole lot dissimilar than it looks today. I think one of the interesting things about the Big Ten package was it's almost the anti-streaming deal. You've got three broadcast networks carrying this product on every Saturday. There's no other property that has that kind of power other than the NFL. You see that every Sunday with the CBS, Fox, and NBC Sunday night game. So it's not going to look a whole lot different. You are going to have to search to find your games, especially if games start ending up on the streamers, which to this point they have not been. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be probably the big change, is if any of these conferences come forth with any type of a significant streaming package that extends beyond just Olympic sports.
Would we see a conference partner, let's just say Walmart, which is in the news today, and Walmart's going to be a place where you can go sign up for a streaming service, but can we see a big corporation like we're seeing with Amazon on Thursday nights? Can we see Walmart and more of those come into play where I'm going to watch the game over on Walmart Plus, so to speak?
Right. I think one of the things that all the streamers are recognizing is that there needs to be some rationalization of this business. I read somewhere where Disney lost $1.1 billion on their streaming last quarter. That's not sustainable. They can't do that. So there, as with most things in the media space, you're going to get some sort of a consolidation and rationalization of the businesses. I think some sort of bundling, which I think the Walmart Plus is probably a first step. If they can cobble together a bunch of the streamers and say, okay, you buy Walmart Plus and you receive all these streaming services as part of your subscription. I don't know how far they can go with that before it doesn't make sense for Walmart as opposed to the streamers, but it's an interesting approach to what up to this point is just a bunch of one-off streamers out there selling their wares on the corner. There's got to be some sort of bundling. You know, a lot of people don't like to hear this, make it more like cable TV, because it's confusing to people. And there's so many different platforms out there from a streaming standpoint. There's got to be some sort of bundling of the product.
Bob Thompson is with us, former president at Fox Sports. He's on the DL, the IR, with an injured wing, but he's nice enough to join us here for a few minutes, a Valley resident as well. And to that end, on the Valley, where does a company like Bally Sports come in? So my show airs over on Bally Sports. Fans of Bally Sports here with the Suns and the Diamondbacks and the Coyotes. But they've never been in the space of college football, really. I mean, they were years ago. I shouldn't say that. Fox years ago was carrying some college and some ACC, so in fairness. Why aren't they involved in this with the Pac-12, given their footprint with a Bally Sports San Diego, Bally Sports LA here in Arizona? Your view on that?
Well, back in the early 2000s, late 90s, the RSNs were very involved on the collegiate side. We used to distribute Big 12 and Pac-12 on the amalgamation of RSNs across the country. Once the broadcast network Fox got into it, the product started coming off the RSNs and went on to Fox, the broadcast network, and FX. One of the difficulties with the RSNs carrying the product was at any given time on a Saturday, you could be preempted by a baseball game and later on in the season, NBA and NHL games. So it made distribution kind of spotty across the entire country. Mm-hmm. So it was ultimately determined that the best way to go would be to distribute the games on a national cable network as opposed to an amalgamation of all the RSNs. So that's kind of when the product went away from the RSNs. They tend to concentrate more on the local professional product. And then the advent of the conference-owned channels, such as Big Ten Network, SEC Network, Pac-12 Networks, that product, that third level, fourth level product, ended up shifting over to the conference channels as opposed to residing on the local RSNs.
Looking back on that, should that have been a talking point to Commissioner Scott to say at least some of your stuff on RSNs, it's better than just sticking it on the Pac-12 network? Or does that just not make any financial sense, Bob?
It was, and it did make financial sense, and it was discussed, but it was determined that the best way for them to go, determined by the conference, a number of us disagreed that the best way to go would be to own 100% of their own channel and kind of go it alone.
Pulling the curtain back, which I like to do, Commissioner Scott walked us around the Pac-12 network when I first started doing what I'm doing, Sports 360 AZ. And I said, you know, we do a recruiting show every week on high school football across the state that could dovetail nicely rather than running games that you recorded features of that I was a part of over and over and over 5 years later. Nope, we're not interested. And so I guess the shoulder programming side of it, was that ever a spot looking back? I didn't want to go here, but I just had to in this conversation. Was shoulder programming ever on your guys' radar saying when you were at Fox saying, let's do this? And was it still the Heisman pose from them?
Some of the stuff is relevant, you know, if you can attach it to the right game, you know, either coming in or out of. But for the RSNs, it's always been the games are the primary, you know, attract the most viewers. The other stuff's nice, but it doesn't always justify the cost. I think what the Pac-12 decided to do was, you know, utilize a lot of library, you know, stuff they had in their vault. So you do see a fair amount of older things, but they've got some decent shows. You know, a lot of all the conference networks have some great, you know, the road to the, you know, Pac-12 championship game, those type of things. I can't tell you a whole lot about Pac-12 networks. I haven't seen it a whole lot because I have DirecTV and they've never been on there. So
nobody's seen it a whole lot.
Yeah, I've seen it in some friends' houses and at, you know, a couple of Buffalo Wild Wings stops. But other than that, I really don't know a lot of it. The one thing I will say about the Pac-12 networks, and I wrote about this a little bit yesterday, is no one's ever said the product looks bad.
No,
you know, it looks good, and their talent is good. It's well produced. The pictures look great. The problem was the business model was kind of flawed from the beginning, and really there was no other way it could ultimately end up than the way it did, which is partially distributed and not exactly a real moneymaker for the conference, especially when compared to ACC, SEC, and the Big Ten conference channels.
Business side of sports with Bob Thompson. A couple other things I'll get you out of here. ESPN, Disney, ABC with the SEC. Okay, this sounds really good on the outside if the Pac-12 were able to be part of that real estate, doesn't it? This would be a win for the conference. If you're following Alabama, Kentucky on any channel, that's a win compared to where you were, right? Or am I missing something here?
No, it should be. I think that, you know, if ABC starts going with 7:30 Eastern SEC windows, which my guess is they probably will, that's a pretty good lead in for 10:30 Eastern, you know, Pac-12 after dark window. So I think from that standpoint, it's good for the conference. I think the fact that for the Pac-12 conference is good. I think the fact that ESPN is out of the Big Ten is also good for both the Big 12 and the Pac-12 because of the fact, you know, they've got $350 million more or less burning a hole in their pocket that they need to fill some windows. If you're an ESPN subscriber, you expect to, and you live on the West Coast, you expect to have a game there at 9 a.m, right after game day ends, all the way through, you know, 11 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. And so they need to fill that window. And the Pac-12 is the best consistent way to fill that window. The Big 12 will have some BYU games, which could kick at 8 Mountain, 7 Pacific, so that, you know, they could use some of those games. And the Big 10, now that USC and UCLA will be on the coast, but they don't want to kick at 7:30 Pacific. UCLA and USC don't like that window at all. They would rather play day windows. And the conference isn't going to put a big time game like a USC, Michigan, or anything like that at 7:30. Possibly, you know, in the 7:30 Pacific, you could see maybe one game from USC, one game from UCLA, and it's you know, USC Purdue or, you know, USC Illinois, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of Rutgers USC, just because the television market of Rutgers being kicked at 7:30 on the West Coast, the poor kids from Rutgers are going to get home the next day.
You know. They got a red eye. That's got a red eye in their life.
What do you make out of the LIV and the PGA Tour from your chair and your past history, and where do you think that goes? Today is a big day if we're just going in the news cycle with Tiger actually right. with the PGA Tour. What do you make out of that?
You know, it's kind of interesting. I'd be interested to see how the players respond. You know, we've certainly seen Jay Monahan respond, and I think that the players have some options that the tour can't actually take. You know, if there becomes some scenario where if some of these majors allow live players in and the tour players, you know, boycott, you know, that's a problem. So I'd be interested to see how far they actually take it. You know, as far as the live product, it's been interesting to watch. There's some things I like. There's some things I don't like. Mm-hmm. The shotgun start is interesting because it creates a, you know, a compact window of a four and a half hour presentation, where right now with the PGA Tour, you've got 2 hours or 3 hours on Golf Channel, and then you've got 3 hours on CBS. So you basically burn an entire day watching golf. With the shotgun start, you see a lot more golf. You know, everybody's out there at the same time. You know, you can technically, I guess the conditions are better because it's everybody's on the same playing field at the same time. No morning late type starts. No, everybody doesn't start at the same hole, but there's no way to do that and do a shotgun start. So that's been interesting. I don't really get the whole team part of the competition. That's kind of lost on me. But, you know, the money's big, and, you know, put all the Saudi stuff aside, you know, make no mistake, these guys are doing it for money. There's right. no doubt about it. So, right. you know, whether they get a TV deal or not, I don't know. You know, you've got NBC, CBS, and ABC/ESPN all involved with the tour. So I don't think they stepped their toe into that water at all as far as going up against the tour with a live deal. Fox, you know, they had a nice fling with golf a few years back. You know, and interestingly, at that time, the first year, if you recall, Greg Norman was the color analyst and was unceremoniously dumped after 1 year. So there's not necessarily a whole lot of love lost between Greg and Fox, regardless of the Australian backgrounds of him and the Murdoch family. So I don't know if they would go that way. They might end up doing some sort of a time buy on somebody, you know, some cable network that, you know, up to this point hasn't, you know, necessarily aired golf. But I think they've got to do something besides the YouTube channel. It's just not getting out to enough people.
Yeah. If you're back in your previous life and you're sitting there on a Sunday and you look at the leaderboard, I've just been watching leaderboards the last few weeks. There's very few recognizable names unless you're really, really into golf. Would you be in a space of PGA Tour, you better do something quick because you're losing all these players, or it's good to grow the game, it'll bring in younger viewers, so on and so forth?
Well, I think this is one of the, what you're seeing now is one of the unfortunate problems you get with the FedEx playoffs. You know, the guys who've got a lot of points, you know, they're already in. They're in the top 70. They don't even have to play the first week. Some of them don't even have to play the next week. So, you know, they'll probably play the third week and then, you know, in the Tour Championship at Eastlake. So it does give some people an opportunity to, you know, shine and advance to the next level. I thought the playoff last week was great. You know, an amazing playoff, those last three or four holes, whatever it was. So I think that's good. It's not unlike how it used to be even before the playoffs. This was kind of a dead time for golf after all the majors were done. And then they introduced the championship at Eastlake, and then they came up with the playoffs with the FedEx Cup. So they've gone a long ways to try and keep the top names involved later into the season. And I think they've been partially successful with that, but not 100%.
Behind the scenes, because golf is so big here in Arizona, behind the scenes, what is going on, do you believe, or you may even know, with executives on the television side and the current, I don't want to use the term chaos, but the unevenness of the PGA Tour and the LIV, or maybe it is chaos from your view.
Right. I don't have any real insight what's going on besides the scene on golf. I can imagine they're struggling with one thing for sure, and that is how much to cover it during the telecast. You know, the tour probably doesn't want them to say a thing, but the viewer wants to know about it. So the conference or the telecasters have to walk this kind of fine line about, you know, how much attention to give the LIV tour without upsetting the PGA. And that's one of the things that the television executives are going through. The other thing is, you know, if people start talking about work stoppages and boycotts and things like that, everybody, you know, starts going, oh, great, what do we need to do now? You know, you got to come up with potentially alternate programming. You know, you're going to get sucked into some sort of antitrust lawsuit. You know, there's a lot of things that this, you know, if this thing keeps going down a bad road, that a lot of people are going to get sucked into it.
Yeah. And you already have seen Faraday jump, Gary McCord. Mm-hmm. Your point about how much do you cover it? I go back to the PGA Championship in the week with Phil. I think it was addressed, I don't know, maybe once when I was watching over the weekend. Like, it was as though Phil didn't even exist.
And right.
You can sense just in the broadcast space of, that truck's got to be really interesting right about now.
It absolutely is. And the thing, though, is it's not like any other news story. They run in cycles. You know, it's going to go away. It's like this college realignment stuff. It's going to go away here after a little bit. And I'll go back into the hole I've been the last 10 years and nobody will hear from me for 10 more years. So, and that's probably a good thing. But I think that once the news cycle's already kind of run, you know, and I think they're going to have, they've got one or two more tournaments this year, and that, you know, that it'll pop its head up again. But then the season ends and golf pretty much goes away until the Farmers bet, you know, in January in San Diego. And that's when all the, you know, the top guys show up again. So it'll be interesting to see how long they can keep, you know, that LIV can keep their name out there. And if they can ultimately end up with any type of a, you know, reasonable television deal, that's, you know, beyond, you know, trying to hunt it down on YouTube.
Well, I will say this, beyond, you're not going to go away in my view. I've really enjoyed the chat. You're not going to go back into a hole. You need to fix your wing. That's for
yes,
sure.
I do.
Bob Thompson.
I can do this now.
It'll grab. Don't do that. Past president of Fox Sports Networks, Bob Thompson, Valley resident. Thanks.
My pleasure, Brad. Enjoyed it.
And we're back with more after this timeout. All right, so this is what we call an emergency gathering of the AZ Audibles crew, Eric Sorensen, Zach Alvira, and myself, getting together and chopping up the story of the day, which is the Hamilton Husky football team for 2022 will not be playing in the playoffs. They are going to be done after the Battle of Arizona Avenue this year will be the Open Division Championship for Hamilton, I think is the best way to put this. Zach, you've been on this story first all day today. When did this come out? What was your initial reaction?
So it first came out this morning when the AIA met for their first executive board meeting of the school year. You know, it was one of those violations that they were seeing along with a couple others. I do know that Chandler Unified School District Athletic Director Sean Rustad was there along with Brett Palmer, who's the AD at Hamilton. And in an executive session, which obviously means closed to the public, they went in, they presented some more facts and maybe evidence, I guess you can say, to basically make Hamilton maybe get off with a warning or just some advisement, which is basically a slap on the wrist.
Okay, let me jump in right on that, okay?
Yeah.
For many people today, they don't know what happened with an assistant coach and screenshots. So we got to go way back on this to get us to this point. So why were they there today? What was the case that they were defending?
So they were trying to defend direct messages on social media that came from defensive coordinator Tim Doherty to a Cesar Chavez player. In those messages, he basically commented on a player from Cesar Chavez after he was at Chili's big man competition down in Maricopa back in June. And essentially he hinted at the kid only having to sit a third of the season if he were to transfer to Hamilton. At least that's what it seemed like, because he said Hamilton plans on playing 14 games every year, alluding to the Huskies wanting to compete for a championship. And he said something about you'll only miss half or like a third of the season. And that wasn't the exact words, of course, but that's basically what he was saying in the messages. So fast forward to today, the AIA, it was reported to them. They're seeing it today. The executive board, that is, went into executive session, came out. Tony Corona, she used to be the president of the board. Now she's just a board member. She motioned to put Hamilton on probation. It passed essentially with all the members aside from Jennifer Burks, the AD at Perry. And for that, I think it was just one of those conflict of interest things. She works in the district and it would be kind of one of those things, whether she voted yes or no. Either way, it could be bad for her. So she, you know, basically excused herself from the vote. And now Hamilton was put on probation and they are out of the playoffs, unless they're able to appeal and win the appeal.
Okay. Eric, when you first heard this story, what was your thought? What was your reaction?
Tim Doherty cheated and he got caught. I mean, this is the most cut and dry case, because you have screenshots of direct messages, guys. It doesn't get that. This is an evidence-based case. What happened broke a rule set by the AIA. Of course, I feel terrible for the kids, but I also feel really bad for a lot of those longtime assistant coaches on Hamilton that had absolutely nothing to do with this. And also the parents. I mean, the parents are giving these kids to these Hamilton coaches to set an example of not only how to act on the field, but off the field as well. This is just Hamilton being Hamilton. We've been down this road before for one reason or another, right?
But is it really Hamilton being Hamilton? Like, I'm looking at this, my reaction is, this is pretty heavy-handed by the AIA. This is very heavy-handed in a competitive open division, or they call it the premier region. This is the biggest region of football. And there's people that are in that room that don't know how football works in the highest of divisions. And you can't have it be 1A, 2A, 3A, and this is how it works in 6A, in my opinion. This seems to me to be very much an overreaction, because it is one assistant coach who, by the way, has been suspended for 3 games. Okay. The fact that these kids had to find out while they're in class today is an absolute shame and a crime, because this happened in the middle of the day. And from my understanding, kids were getting text messages that your season is over in terms of the finals. That's not good. So you had something that happened over the summer at a combine in Maricopa that leads to one of the teams in the open division. It really doesn't even matter if they're in the open division conversation. It's just a team gets eliminated from postseason because of something that happened in the off season by an assistant coach who should be disciplined and was disciplined. Zach, am I missing something here?
Well, you know, I asked the AIA this, and the thing is, the problem is this was their first meeting of the year. Even David Hines told me that he wishes he could have seen this earlier on, maybe in early August or even in late July. But they have a certain time frame when their meetings take place and when they start. And unfortunately, the start of it was today, when we're only, 2 weeks away from the start of the season. The timing of it sucks. I'm with you, Brad. The timing of it is horrible. It came out. All these kids, I'm sure, were getting the Twitter notifications, text messages, like you said. And let's be honest, people don't like Hamilton. So when people saw this, it was a mixed reaction of finally they deserve it. And, oh, well, I feel bad for the kids. I feel horrible for the kids. I really do. Because a lot of those seniors, like what they were told, they don't get that opportunity anymore to compete for an open division championship or a championship in general.
But it was It's in the off season. And I'm not excusing it away. So people are like, oh, you're excusing, you're siding with it. No, this just seems to me to be common sense that you're going to drop a bomb on a football program of something that happened in June. The kid never transferred that I'm aware of. Did the kid come to Hamilton because of this? Or was it, and I have no problem with the coaches over at Chavez taking the screenshots and turning them in. I have no problem with that. I don't think it's right. When I see coaches that sit there and like and make comments, and there are head coaches at other programs that do this nonsense. You can't do that. You stay away from players.
Here's the thing.
But he took it too far.
Sure,
he broke a rule.
You're right.
And the AIA can't. They're all guilty by association. As unfair as that is, that's the cold hard facts of this. And if you really want to look at this, AD Palmer had the chance to set the example the right way and either fire him or suspend him for the entire season, which may have drawn back some of that penalty for the postseason. He opted for 3 games. He played Russian roulette. He lost. Ridiculous, because again, it is an AIA rule that was broken.
And that's what I was going to say too. People always get mad at the AIA because they don't enforce rules or they don't do this or they turn their heads to stuff. Look, the AIA saw a violation and they're enforcing a rule and now people are upset about it. Obviously, the AIA is not going to win either way, but that's the way I look at it. They thought there was enough there to warrant a probation and to follow through with what the rule is and what the punishment is for those rules. And so they did it. And Hamilton has a chance to appeal. I mean, obviously, they have that chance, which is a good thing.
What are they going to appeal, Zach? What are they going to appeal?
You know, honestly, it's going to be a tough case. I mean, like Eric said, the evidence is there. And whether or not you want to believe that, you know, okay, off season or, you know, what's allowed in the off season, what isn't. I mean, it'd be the same thing like if a team started putting on helmets and pads in the off season in the summer and started hitting each other. That's against the rules, too. It all still applies. So
Zach, what does it matter when it happened? I don't care if it happened during the season, during the summer, yeah, on the moon. It's still a violation. That's the thing. It doesn't matter if it's the middle of the summer or if it's in the season.
Why not?
It's directly breaking the rules.
The thing is, how many
broke the rules? It feels like they went after a big fish. They got the big fish, and everybody else, you better pay attention because we got the big fish. And all these kids are having to pay for it because now we've set the example. We can take down Hamilton. We'll take down everybody else. That's how this feels to me on the surface.
I actually kind of agree with you on that one.
Why do you have a problem with that?
No, it's something to me. The off season does make a difference. This was a coach. The school was not in session. Okay. These summer leagues that they're going to, it's not like school is in session. You had a rogue coach who went out of his way to do something that we all see is wrong, that is illegal. But does that mean you bring down the hammer like this? This just
This
seems overarching, Eric. It seems overbearing.
Let me jump in here real quick, Zach.
I think you do, Brad, because it wasn't just a like. It was like a few sentences and the hint of, hey, if you come to Hamilton, you're going to play a whole bunch of postseason games and you're going to be elevated playing against the top competition. Wink, wink, wink. I mean, like, that's not a like, because sometimes I accidentally like tweets. That happens when you're scrolling through your timeline. That does happen. This was a direct violation. He made contact with this player with every intention to recruit him.
I agree with you. I do agree with you on that. We agree on that. I just think this penalty is way harsher than it needs to be by wiping out a team and for these kids to have no shot at it. Okay, so from there, what happens next on the appeal process, Zach, from your views, you're working this story?
I mean, I don't know beyond the obvious, and that is parting ways with Tim Doherty. I don't know what else Hamilton can do to win this appeal. And I'm not advocating for that. Obviously, I don't want to see anyone lose their jobs. I don't want to see kids lose their season or their, you know, their playoff hopes. But like Eric said, it's kind of a cut and dry thing. I mean, Tim obviously was very, you know, he complimented the player on his game. I get that. I, you know, coaches can do that, whatever. It doesn't matter. It was just the wording of it that obviously looked very bad. And then the intention as well that was there.
Sure.
I thought three games was good. Okay, I thought three games was good from Hamilton.
But if they fire Tim, then Tim's going to sit there and say, oh, wait a minute. You guys already suspended me for three games. You guys are trying to make up for this. Like, Tim's in an interesting spot if that's how it goes.
I think it's a lose-lose either way for Hamilton right now.
Okay. The players. What have you heard early on here about players saying, peace out, I'm transferring. And no, I'm not going to sit five. Daddy ball or dad that's got a lot of money and lawyers are going to say, you know, these adults did this to my kid, right?
Mm-hmm. I have not heard anything yet. Will I probably hear stuff, or can we expect to see maybe one or two this early transfer? Probably. That's just the nature of it. Parents are probably going to freak out. Kids might freak out, and for good reason, obviously. And they're probably going to go. And quite honestly, they would probably win the appeal too. I could see them winning all of their appeals to become eligible almost right away. But at the same time, if those kids are, you know, maybe if they're truly loyal to that Hamilton program, and I don't want to put them in a bad spot, obviously saying that, but if they love the Hamilton football program, they kind of want to try to see how this plays out with the appeal process. If Hamilton goes down that route, because they haven't officially said if they will or not, then we might not see transfers for another week or so.
Eric, what do you make of that?
Brad, you mentioned something off the top that I want to go back and circle back on. You said, sure. you know, what happens now with the players and the motivation to play? This isn't the death penalty, but I bet for some of those seniors who aren't going to have the opportunity to play in college and came off a season where, let's be honest, everyone thought, you know, Hamilton had a really good chance to run the table last year until Saguaro got them. What is their motivation to play? Is Coach Zadefsky going to say, circle the wagons for that Chandler game and let's go win a region? That doesn't seem like, you know, you're really aiming for the Hamilton program. But when you're handcuffed, like, you know, like the Huskies are right now, how are those players going to be motivated to play a season where they know they can't hoist that gold ball?
Sure. And they're open with Bishop Gorman. Zach, you're going to that game, right?
Yep, I'm going to. Yeah, they second week of the season.
Second week.
And I want to go back to what Eric just said, too. You said that it's not quite the death penalty. If this plays out and they're still ineligible for the postseason and we see players transfer in mass numbers, this is the death penalty for that Hamilton football program. It will take a couple of years to rebuild if they have a mass exodus of transfers because of what just happened.
Well, and then you have to wonder about Mike Zadepsky's future as head coach, right? I mean, this happened under his watch. This was his assistant coach. It's just the nature of the business. And the parents, you guys know this. I live in the wild, wild west, known as the Southeast Valley, known as the Bermuda Triangle. When this starts to go here in the next, I don't know, it's been 6 hours, in the next 12, 14, 24 hours, stuff's going to fly around here. And
I'd also love to hear the conversations of some of the top high-end recruits that graduated last year, whether it be Nico Marchio or Deuce Davis or some of those other players. I mean, they have to be thinking to themselves, we got out before everything went sideways. And yeah, I guess that's good luck on their part. But like you said, who knows what's going to happen? And Zach made a great point. Yeah, in a way, it is a death penalty, especially if they have that mass exodus of players.
I guess, and to put a bow on this, for me, if there is an appeal, and I'm trying to wrap my arms around how you can do an appeal, and if the AIA comes back and looks at it and says, yeah, we're going to walk this back a little bit after cooler heads have prevailed, I would be okay with that. But if there are more than just the one exchange with the one player, because that to me just does not say, okay, let's put a death penalty on postseason for this program. It just doesn't feel right. It feels heavy-handed. That's where I'm at. Eric, final word from you on this.
I think the AIA needs to set a precedent. I mean, this is there, like we talked about, this is clear intent. There was a recruitment that happened, and the coaches should know better. The coaches talk to their kids all the time. Be smart on social media. Make sure you reread what you write before you hit that send button. And now they have one of their own coaches, not only getting the coaching staff in trouble, but basically, you know, bonfiring the entire season for the entire team.
Zach, final thoughts.
It's just an unfortunate situation for the players, especially. And like Eric mentioned, for the coaches that had nothing to do with it. It's unfortunate all the way around. But again, people have said for years, they want the AIA to stop overlooking things like this or stop overlooking different rule violations. AIA said, okay, fine. We'll make an example. And unfortunately, it's Hamilton that is the example.
They will not be in the postseason this year. That is AZ Audible's little emergency session with Eric Sorensen, Zach Alvira. I'm Brad Sussmat.